Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode number 79, recorded November 21st, 2012. Will Harris. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by Ford, featuring Available Sync. Now you can control your media player with simple voice commands. Enjoy your drive while you easily search and listen to your favorite songs. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker looking for video, photos, illustrations, music, sound effects, After Effects templates, or 3D models, check out Pond5. And for an exclusive 50 free stock media downloads, go to pond5.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation. Now, you might notice something right away. I'm not Leo Laporte. He just came back from a vacation. I think he's jet-lagged. So I'll be filling in. I'm Aya Zaftar. And today, we've got a real special guest. You've probably seen the lower third. Will Harris is online with us all the way from the UK. TWiT listeners probably know him already as that English fellow that is on TWiT sometimes, right?
Hey, what is up, Ayaz and co? Ayaz, I'm just going to say before we get started, you're doing a great job of hosting Triangulation. Well done. Keep it up.
Thank you. I really like that amount of pressure. If you guys don't know, Will and I used to work together for all of a year or so or something like that.
It was like 2 years we made a little web show together and it was really awesome.
Yes, it
was. And then you got a much better job.
Things worked out okay for me, obviously. I got a nice little chair here. Well, we're not here to talk about me, Will. That's crazy. We're here to talk about you, okay? So, today I was doing some research on you, you know, because why not? You have, like, your own Google Knowledge Graph card. You have a Wikipedia page. Why on earth should people know who you are in tech anyway, in case they never heard of you?
Do I really have a little Google Knowledge Graph card?
Yeah, you do.
It's been a while since I Googled myself. So why should people know who I am?
Yes.
So for about 9 months, I was the second most twitted guest in the history of TWiT.
Twitted?
Only behind Patrick Norton. So that's one reason. The second reason is that I used to run a really popular geek website called BitTech, which is all about hardware mods and things like that. And the third reason is that I started a company called Channel Flip, and we are a YouTube network that produces loads of really cool English stuff on YouTube.
Let's go way back. How did you even get into tech? I know you were an editor and you did all these crazy things with video, but how did you even get started into technology at all? Were you just like a gadget nut or did somebody just say, hey, Will, here's a job?
Way back into the way back machine. The way that I got started in tech was I was 6 years old and my dad bought a computer, which was a BBC. Did you guys get the BBC in America? Like the sort of beige computer with like the black keyboard?
I don't think so. I mean, my first computer was from Radio Shack, so that was a long time
ago. Oh, okay. It was like the kind of the same time as the Spectrum. So it was kind of like that. And he got Elite. You know Elite, right? The video game.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me how to play it, and I was completely blown away by it. I was like, oh my God, what is this? And then simultaneously, he used to get like the magazines that would go with it, like computer magazines, and they would have code in the back of the magazines that you could use, that you could type into the computer, record it onto tape, and it would like be like hacks and cheats for all the games on the BBC. So I first really got into technology, helping my dad type up this just raw code to go into the copy of Elite that he was playing. That's how I got started. Then I spent my years geeking out with an Atari ST, STFM, not Amiga, because Atari kicked Amiga's ass repeatedly, and that is very important for everybody to know. I then went from an Atari to going to high school, And I got my first PC in high school, which was a Pentium 90, which was amazing. And when I got the Pentium 90, and then when I got the internet on the 56K modem, that was it. I was just completely away. And I fell in love completely with technology and became an uber geek.
So you got computers and then you liked tech, huh? Sounds like my story so far. But how did you get into the business of being, in tech? It's one thing to just love gadgets, right? And to mess with your time, to just, you know, lose a lot of time doing that. How did you get started professionally when it came to writing?
So, how did I get started professionally? So, there was a website called BitTech that somebody that I didn't know had started. And it was this tiny little website, and it was all about case modding and soldering and all that kind of like the uber geeky stuff. And I used to read it, and I used to think it was really awesome. And the one thing that really wound me up about it was that the guy couldn't write or couldn't spell. Like, he could write, but like he couldn't write properly. And as somebody doing an A-level in English, I was like, hey, I think I could contribute to this website. And I think I could help out. And so I emailed this guy and I said, hey, I really love your website and it's really cool. Can I help you make your sentences make sense? And so he said, yeah, sure, you sound like a really nice guy. So over the next few months, we worked together doing that. And he was like, hey, I've got a real job and I'm going to go off and do that. Would you like to now just have this thing? And so I thought, yeah, okay. And so I got a bunch of friends and we sort of took it over. And that is how we started, how I started writing about technology. And it started with just articles that we would make ourselves. We'd go and get, you know, parts from Radio Shack and make up different things. And we went through a whole phase of trying to get contacts in the technology industry, because people started reading the things that we were writing. We were like, hey, maybe we could get some graphics cards to write about, or hey, maybe we could get some processors to test, or that kind of thing. And eventually, over the course of about 4 or 5 years, as I went through college, it became this really popular thing where we had like a million visitors every month reading it, and we were getting all the latest graphics cards and all the latest processors sent to us, and we were going to all the events and covering all this stuff. And I just sort of fell into it. It just sort of spiraled out of control by itself.
Now, you know, in your Wikipedia page, it says you got a degree in law. You know, why on earth do you have a degree in law, and why are you in tech? That's strange.
Because my mother made me hedge my bets.
That's all? Mom said get a law degree?
Yeah, you know what? I was in high school. And I was, you do three major subjects when you get to the last couple of years of high school. So I did computing and English literature because I was a tech geek and because I really liked writing. And my mother was like, you should do something that actually might get you a real job one day. You should go and do law. So I did law. And then when it came to go to university, I'd been writing about technology then for like a couple of years. And so I thought, well, I'm still going to write. It's still going to be writing about technology, so I should probably pursue the one that I can't do as a hobby, which is law. So I went and I read law, and I actually got my sort of my degree in it, and I got halfway through the qualification, like the post-grad qualification process for becoming a lawyer, and ditched it because it was mind-numbingly boring.
Wait a second, what kind of law were you looking at? How could it be boring? I mean, I studied law. I got a couple of degrees in that. Boring?
Oh, you've got a couple of degrees. I'll just break out the couple of degrees.
I do have a couple of degrees.
That's fine. I've only got one degree. That's fine. But you've got a couple. I don't mind.
Well, I didn't like sell my company when I was like 30 and make $1 billion or anything. So I think you got me beat on that.
$1 billion.
No, but how did you find law boring? What were you working on?
So when I was at college, the thing I loved about law was you could write these massive essays and massive theses on what is the nature of justice and what does it mean to be, what is law versus justice? What does it mean? Should you have prisoners voting? Like, should the government do what the people want or what is best for the people? You do like all these really big topics and you answer all these really big questions and it's really academic. And I'm a bit of an academic geek, so I really enjoyed that. And then when it came to learning about going into private practice for law, you discover that A, most of it is paperwork and writing contracts. And B, nobody gives two monkeys what you think about the nature of justice, because who the heck are you? And, you know, what are you going to do to change the world? Nothing. So I found it incredibly procedural and incredibly dry. And I didn't get to tell everybody my opinions about how the world should be, and therefore very uninteresting.
You didn't want to be a cog in the machine, write up contracts? I mean, it sounds like fun to me.
I'm not a cog kind of guy. I'm just not a cog. I'm like a monkey wrench.
That's good. That's good to know that you're like a monkey wrench. So you got a degree because of your mom. You started succeeding in tech. You're at BitTech with a bunch of friends, million people visiting the site all the time. Eventually, you left all that behind. What was that process like?
Scary. I left it all behind because I wanted to do something more mainstream. I was really enjoying doing technology, and I was really doing the type of tech that we were doing. And I, you know, there was a time when I knew more about Vertex shader pipelines than pretty much anybody. But I wanted to go and do something that I felt would have a bigger impact and would reach, you know, tens of millions of people, not just a million people. And I didn't think that was super niche tech. And so about the time I was thinking this, Google bought YouTube. And there was sort of this feeling that maybe YouTube could be the next big thing. And the reason a lot of people thought it was the next big thing was that this whole concept of, you know, people at home uploading their own videos, or, you know, dogs on skateboards and viral videos and all those kind of things, that was going to be the new television. That was going to be what advertisers bought into, is the new television all the way through the future. And what I thought intuitively was that my experience writing and editing and freelancing and those kind of things, and working with advertisers, you know, BitTech was really popular with advertisers. They loved what we did, and we, you know, we did well financially from it. My sense was that advertisers wouldn't want to advertise against dogs on skateboards or, you know, stupid videos of kids biting each other's fingers. What they wanted was high quality content. And they would want it. Oh, you still there?
I'm still there. Did something happen?
Wow. Do you know what I just discovered?
I don't know. What did you discover?
OS 10 quite happily goes to sleep. Even if you're in the middle of a Skype conversation.
Well, I mean, the conversation was getting a little boring there. I mean, you put it to sleep. That's not a good thing.
Geez, I'm sorry.
You're talking about like the future of television on the internet or something? Come on, that's crazy, Will.
No, because... Yeah, I know. I mean, that seems friggin' ridiculous. So about that, so I thought about it. It was the future of television on the internet. It needs to be high-quality content. It wasn't just to be dogs on skateboards. And I had met this guy called Leo Laporte. In fact, that's a total lie. I'd never met him. I'd only ever spoken to him on the internet, because when I was in San Francisco 1 week to cover the Intel Developer Forum, which is the big Intel chip conference that they do once a year in San Francisco. And I was a big fan of Twit, and I was listening to Twit every week religiously. And I just emailed Leo to say, hey, I'm at the IDF this week, and I haven't seen any of your Twit panelists here. Like, I haven't seen Kevin or Patrick or Robert or any of those guys. Do you have anybody here? If you don't have anybody here, would you like me to write something for you? Like, I can write you like a little report, and I can send it to you, and then you'll have some original reporting from the, you know, from on the ground at IDF. And he said, yeah, sure, that'd be really interesting. Why don't I give you a quick Skype, and you can tell me what's been going on? And then I can write it up. And so I said, sure. So I arranged. So I sat in my hotel room in the Marriott on 4th Street in San Francisco, and I get this Skype coming in from Leo Laporte. And I'm like, hey, Leo, it's amazing. How great to talk to you. You know, I listen to you every week, and this is really cool. And he was like, yeah, so just tell me what's been going on at the IDF. And I was like, cool. So I spent maybe 15 minutes just saying what had happened at IDF, what Intel had released, what that meant, how that was, et cetera. And at the end of this conversation that we were having, he went, okay, well, that's great. I'm going to drop that into the show on Sunday. And I was like, what? We were just having a conversation. He was like, no, I recorded the whole thing. I'm just going to drop it into the show on Sunday. I was like, oh my God. So if you go back to whatever it is, I don't know, Twit 110 or something, like it's a long time ago now. There's this episode of Twit that's IDF week, and about halfway through the show, he just goes, yeah, so we weren't at IDF this week, but Will Harris, here is the pre-record I did with Will Harris. And so that was it. And I guess people on Twit enjoyed listening to it, because then I got invited back repeatedly, which was great. Anyway, all of which, to get back to the original point of this original story, Ayaz, because I'm not going to bore you, is to say that... what's the point of the story? Oh, yeah. So I thought online is going to be really interesting. And Leo was only doing audio, and I thought, I bet you could do this in video. And so that was the idea that I had. So that's why I started Channel Flip. And the idea was to be an online broadcasting network for professional-grade content only on the internet, but not just about technology, about video games and DVDs and all kinds of, like, culture. And that's where the idea came from.
I've got some more questions to ask. But one of the weird things, though, like, you just seem to just go up to people, like, yeah, do you need any help? And they just say, sure. So that's how a VidTech worked and Twit. You're just like, hey, I got an idea. And they're like, yeah, sure. So just ask, apparently, is the secret.
I'm just a helpful guy.
I got a lot more questions for you. But first,
you know, I like to be, like, to think of myself as a neighbor. Completely. I see something that I really love, and I get really invested in it, and then I want to help do it. And then often it turns out I can do it quite well. Taxi Cab in the chat room says it's Twit 45. That's amazing. Twit 45. So, Web 8935 says Leo got Will started. So definitely. So I started Channel Flip, and we started the company, and we managed to get a bunch of, I don't know what you call them, the equivalent of, in London you call them city types, in New York I guess they're Wall Street types, and they were ex-Wall Streeters, and they were all just like, you know, they had bits of money that they spent on, you know, stupid little investments. And so we managed to raise like $100,000 to rent a tiny little studio and hire a couple of people and start Channel Flip and start experimenting. And we started making these videos, and they were all universally awful. I mean, they were terrible. And the hate and the comments we got on YouTube were hateful and convinced us that we had, you know, no idea what we're doing. My the guy that we started Channel Flip with, Justin, you know, he used to get, you know, who is this fat pig man telling me about DVDs? Why, you know, I wish he'd just go jump off a cliff. You have no talent on YouTube. You should just kill yourself, you know.
This is back before YouTube was known as a cesspool.
YouTube great.
This is back before YouTube comments were known.
YouTube great.
All right, well, I got to ask, we're going to get more into Channel Flip. First, let's take a quick break and thank Ford, because this episode of Triangulation is brought to you by Ford, featuring Sync's versatile entertainment features. Like, you can browse your music collection by genre, album, artist, playlist, all using voice commands, so you don't have to mess around with menus. Playlists, Sync allows you to use your voice control of your media player. So if you have a certain mood, you want to listen to a kind of style of song, you can actually say, play similar music. That's a voice command that it recognizes. Also, you can listen to your entertainment on pretty much any device. If you've got a smartphone, a USB drive, MP3 player, Ford can figure it out. And it's also got iTunes tagging. So if you don't have to worry about remembering the name of that great song you just heard. So available Sync with My Ford Touch and HD radio technology with iTunes tagging, it lets you tag a song you like, transfer that info to an iPod, and purchase that song directly from the iTunes store at a later time. Best of all, Ford offers Sync on every 2012 and 2013 Ford vehicle sold in the USA, including the 2012 Ford Focus. You can learn more about this and other technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at ford.com/technology. So, Will, YouTube comments.
Guess what, Ayaz? Guess what?
What's that?
I just bought a new Ford and it has Ford Sync.
Yeah! Did you get the discount?
Wait, there's a discount?
No, we don't have an offer code, sorry.
Do you know what? I almost went into the Ford dealer and I was like, NSFW 11. Does that work? No? Frame rate 11. Can I have 10% off the life of my order?
You must have thought you were having some kind of conniption or something. Just spitting out things like that. NSFW 11. Come on. It means something, really.
Yeah. So wait, what were we talking about?
Well, you left the safety of being an editor, and then you moved over to the video world. You were getting just harangued about content. Justin was getting hammered with YouTube comments. You as well.
Yes.
There was a couple of shows, Channel Flip Tech, Channel Flip... what was the other one called? Movies? It wasn't called Movies.
We had Channel Flip Film, Channel Flip Tech, and Channel Flip Games that we made. And then what happened is that I got this email from these couple of jokers in New York who were like, hey, I really like what you're doing on Channel Flip. You seem to be building like a really cool little network. We're making some shows and they're kind of about funny tech things. Can we release them through your podcast network? And I was like, well, who the heck are you and why should I give two hoots? And this guy went, I'm Ayaz Akhtar. And I went, well, I don't care, but all right, I seem like not. So then you started making this show called Channel Flip Web, and it was all about the best of the web, and it was about cool websites that you could go to. I don't know why I'm explaining what you did, but there you go. Anyway,
you're the
guest.
Really
good, and we really loved it, and it kept, and it was actually, I'm pretty sure it was like the most popular thing we did. It was certainly the thing that we released the most reliably, because you guys were way more pro than we were.
Yeah, and, we tried to be consistent.
Eventually, we weren't consistent, partly because we were running around trying to get more money all the time, because we kept running out of money. And then we worked together for like a couple of years, or like 18 months at least. And then we decided that we were going to completely pivot the direction that we were going in, and we were going to forget doing anything that we made about geek culture and that kind of thing. And in fact, we were just going to go like Celebrity Central. We had this idea that celebrity on TV is the thing that gets ratings. So celebrity must be the thing that gets ratings on the internet. And we started making shows with people like Richard Hammond, who you guys might know from Top Gear, with a guy called Robert Llewellyn, who you guys might know from Red Dwarf, which is a really popular sci-fi series. A guy called David Mitchell, who you won't know because nobody's ever heard of him in the US. But I always say that he is basically like the UK version of John Hodgman. He's basically like a slightly less crazy version of John Hodgman. And I mean that in the nicest possible way because I love John Hodgman. And so we created these shows and we went all celebrity. And it went really well, and loads of people watched them. We got up to the stage where, you know, we had millions of people watching these shows every month, and that was really satisfying. And then, having done that, we then went in a complete 360 loop the beginning of last year, and we decided that actually, having started an entire company on the premise that what we wanted was professional production quality and brand-safe stuff that wasn't made by kids in bedrooms, we went, actually, there's this whole new world kicking off of YouTubers and the YouTube networks and people like Revision 3 and Machinima and Maker and this whole new type of content being consumed by a lot of younger people, but actually with incredible production values given the amount of money put into it. And we said, this is what we need to do. This is definitely what we need. And we pivoted the second time our entire business back to focus on that, like producers and those kind of things. As I see you typing in the chat room trying to derail me, I won't have it. We got all the way through to the end of last year, and we had built this massive YouTube network of like, I don't know, 50 or 60 independent producers. And we got approached by the lovely folks at Shine Group, who said, we really love what you're doing. Why don't you come and do it with us and we will turbocharge what you do. We'll give you some more money to invest and we will give you all the resources and infrastructure of the amazing Shine Group and you can probably do a better job. And we said, that sounds like a pretty good idea. So if you don't know Shine Group is a TV production company and they make things like MasterChef, Loser and The Face. And what else do they have in the States? All kinds of stuff they have in the States. MasterChef is the biggest thing they have worldwide. And so we said that's a really good idea. So January this year, we became part of Shine Group, and now we've just been doing the whole YouTube network thing for the last, good Lord, 11 months.
Now, didn't you guys have a meeting with Rupert Murdoch? Is there? Can you talk about that at all? I remember hearing a very colorful version of that. I just wonder if there's any way you could give an edited version of that for the audience.
Is there any way I can give an edited version of that? Yes, absolutely. So Shine Group was started by Liz Murdoch, who is Rupert's daughter, and who is an incredibly talented and incredibly lovely executive and fantastically brilliant creative mind. And so when we came into Shine Group, she invited us to part of the Shine Group itself is part of News Corp, and obviously News Corp is the Rupert Murdoch thing. So we got invited, I think the first week that we were part of News Corp, technically, we got invited to the News Corp digital offsite, which was a lovely week away in the States. And got to meet Rupert and say hello and introduce ourselves and say who we were. And that was a lot of fun.
That is a very edited version. He had nothing to say to you? I'm pretty sure something. Okay, well, it's up to you if you want to tell that story. It's just a good story. If you guys don't know what it is, meet Will at a bar one day and definitely ask him.
Yeah, I'll give you a drink first.
But it won't be out on this podcast necessarily. The chat room did have a question. Curtis B. wanted to know, with Will's company being bought, Revision 3 being bought, do you think that the independent, good quality web TV is going away in favor of the big guys? You think that all this purchasing is consolidating things?
No, it's going to make it better. Because the guys at Discovery bought Revision 3, the guys at News bought us, what they know is that they don't really know what this is. They know how to make television, and they know how to do things kind of the old school way. They've got no idea how to do things in this kind of YouTube digital world. And so the reason they're buying companies like Revision 3 or like Channel Flip is to try and figure out what that is. So what we have found, and I know what the guys at Revision 3 have found, is that they're not trying to interfere in what anyone is doing, because that would defeat the entire point of buying a company to learn from it. So I don't think the era of independent web television is going anywhere. There will still be lots of independents. I think what is going to happen is that the independent studios like Maker, like Machinima, like Revision 3, like Channel Flip, are going to grow up over the next half a decade, and they are going to become even bigger and even better.
I don't know if we touched upon this already, but what was your mindset from switching? I mean, you had a paying gig, right? You were an editor. You were doing all this stuff. And then you're like, screw it. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to move to video. What was that process like in your head to go, okay, let's just burn this whole thing down, start all over again? Seems like a crazy idea, Will.
It is, but I'm kind of, what can I say? I don't like taking risks, but I like to think of myself as a risk taker. And sometimes my desire to think of myself as a risk taker gets in the way of my natural inclination not to take risks. So it was something that I really wanted to do. And I sort of felt like, well, I haven't, on the scale of 1 to 10, I haven't got a lot to lose. I'm at 5. My job is great and I love it. But it's not like I'm walking away from, making a job where I earn millions of pounds a year, or it's not like I'm, going to not be able to pay my rent because I have some money saved and my girlfriend works and I'll just leech off her. And I sort of felt like if you're going to take a big risk and properly start a company when you're sort of 25, 26 is a great time to do it, because really, you can afford to do it. It's quite tough to do it in your 30s or something. When you've got kids and you've got responsibility, you've got mortgages. So I thought I should really take the leap. The thing that made me almost not do it was when I'd made the decision and I just left the company, and I decided that I was going to start Channel Flip. And I got a phone call from somebody that I talked to previously at a company, who offered me a job which was managing editor of their entire luxury portfolio, which included all their travel magazines, all their five-star yacht magazines, all the in-flight magazines, all the jewelry and fashion magazines. And it was basically like, would you, you know, like to travel around the world, going to luxury trade fairs, experiencing luxury hotels in luxury destinations for free as a journalist, and not even have to write that much because you're managing editor and somebody really doing the work? That was the one thing that made me go, maybe I should not be doing this.
Wait, you just got offered this job out of the blue? They're like, by the way, we just wanted to have you move around.
Yeah, it's because it was through somebody that I knew. It was through a contact.
This is ridiculous.
And it was a choice. And I was like, you know, my girlfriend at the time was kind of like, well, you should probably take the really exciting job that lets you jet set around the world and make money and do all these things. And I was like,
sounds like a good idea. What? Okay, that sounds absolutely absurd. Absurd, Will. Absolutely absurd. Man.
Yes.
This. I mean, the reason why I bring this
almost up... almost as absurd as that Batman t-shirt, but
almost.
Not quite.
Thank you. Well, I don't think it's absurd. It's an actual, like, licensed shirt. It's not like I made this over there in the back. That's not absurd. with the Skype laugh there, that was pretty good. That was in a very
similar... Right. It's absurd. Pause again. Okay. It is pretty...
Having trouble hearing you. There seems to be some kind of Skype issue. Are you running Dropbox or something crazy? Are you uploading like the next great awesome video somewhere?
No, you know what? I'm just I've got a lot of BitTorrent going on. I'm pirating a lot of Hollywood movies right now.
I'm sure Rupert loves that. I'm glad you're saying that.
That's his favorite. It's The Simpsons. I'm literally downloading The Simpsons right now.
There's your problem right there. There's the small thing. Oh, that's crazy. I was in the
Come on, give me another question.
Well, I'm looking for the chat room questions. Right now, they are the third person in triangulation, right? We're just like, what's going on there? People want, they're calling.
Curtis B says, does Will consider himself an entrepreneur, or did he finally find what he likes to do? I do consider myself an entrepreneur. It's the being an entrepreneur is great fun. It's about starting something new. It's about trying something that nobody's done before, or doing it in a different way from what people have done before. It's the excitement of the new. It's trying to prove that you can build something that has some value. And I think the satisfaction of proving yourself right as an entrepreneur is incredibly self-validating. And as a terminally insecure person, based on my entire geeky youth, self-validation is something that I crave. And so I think, I definitely consider myself an entrepreneur.
Well, this is great.
I'll tell you about my amazing self-validation. Is that, I don't know if you can see behind me on the wall.
What is that?
Is a little framed little doody here, which is actually the framed press release of Shine Group acquiring Channel Flip. I framed it and put it on the wall. And got Liz to sign it, and it's one of my favorite possessions because it is the ultimate in personal validation.
So you've got a two-page press release. That's how important it was. Not even just one sheet. It's a two-page.
Not even just one page. Two pages. You can keep zooming. It's not going to look any
better. I'm surprised you didn't have it blown up and just make it wallpaper. I mean, it's entirely too small, Will.
Ooh. That's not a bad idea, actually.
There you go. Just make it a giant wallpaper.
I just put it above my bed, like on the ceiling. So I can just lie in bed looking at it.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you need validation right before you go to bed, I guess that's a good idea. You're going to have that while you listen to Tech News Today as you go to sleep. I'm not making that up,
most
by the
people
way.
Ayaz knows this, but most people don't know that I have my nightly routine, which is that I have to listen to Tech News Today every night while lying in bed. That has to happen. And so the time that I hear Ayaz and Tom and Sarah the most is when I'm lying in my pajamas.
Have you had any Tech News Today related nightmares after hearing us in your head right before you went to bed?
No, you know what? It makes me, it chills me out. It chills me out. No nightmares. In fact, I would say that I have maybe 75% less general nightmares as a consequence of my Tech News Today routine.
Good to know that, that Technique Today can be used as a sleep aid. So if you're, if you're having problems...
That's so horrific. Yeah. If nothing else, you put me to sleep every single night.
That's great. I'm glad that we can put you to bed. There's a question here. You've had so many great opportunities, but what was the worst one you were offered? I mean, obviously people just like giving you millions of dollars and like, here's a jet-setting life, but what's the crappiest position you've been offered lately, other than being a triangulation guest?
Oh, that's a good question. What's the crappiest position I've been offered? I don't know if there's a crappy position that I've been offered. The crappiest position that I took was when I was a teenager. I worked I had like a Saturday job, which was working in, I guess it's like the equivalent, it's a place called Woolworths. It's like the equivalent of Walmart. Over with you guys, and I worked as a cashier in the toy department at Woolworths every Saturday and Sunday for about 3 or 4 years in my teenage years, and it was awful. It gave me a lifelong hatred of Christmas, is what it did, because Christmas was the worst time of the year for parents buying toys for really aggravating kids. And though I just remember this one year where Tickle Me Elmo came out. And we had a shelf of Tickle Me Elmos right in front of the cash registers. And these little children would just walk by and just tickle every bloody Elmo along the thing and set off this whole 5 minutes of nonstop Elmo cacophony that just made me want to kill myself. And to this day, I hate Elmo. I know that we're trying to save PBS and Big Bird and Mitt Romney and all that kind of thing. Honestly, if they killed Elmo tomorrow, I'd be so happy.
Okay, so you hate Christmas and you hate Elmo. You these are really popular positions, and you somehow work with Rupert Murdoch. I'm sure the audience
I'm
is loving you right now.
I'm not going to get elected president of the United States, am I? Let's face it.
Well, there's all kinds of reasons you shouldn't be president of the United States, but you could try. I mean, there could be an opportunity someone just throws at you randomly. It seems like your kind of
exactly
luck.
That's definitely the worst opportunity I've had handed to me. I have done some pretty grim things, like I've written. You know what the worst thing I did was. And this was, again, an opportunity that I took because I was stupid and young and I needed some money, was that there was a magazine... that could have sounded a lot worse. No, it wasn't that bad. There was a magazine in the UK called Custom PC, which was basically like, you know, a case modding magazine. And they had wanted to do for the... It was something like the 10th anniversary of Quake, I want to say. A graphics card super test, like take all the graphics cards from the previous 10 years in terms of like generation. So starting with the Riva TNT and the TNT 2 and then the 3DFX and then the 3DFX Voodoo 2 and then the original GeForce and GeForce 2 and GeForce 3 and the ATI, whatever the hell it was, and do a frame rate like comparison chart in Quake of all these different graphics cards. And I said, yeah, that sounds like a really great plan. That would be really fun. And it was one of the worst weeks I've ever spent with computers in my life. Because what I sort of realized was that, A, you couldn't even get the drivers anymore. So we're back in the era of Windows XP. And like, you couldn't get a 3DFX Windows XP driver. You couldn't get a Riva Windows XP driver. So you were trying to go back into DOS, and then you're trying to build computers to go back into like the DOS days, and you're trying to remember about like upper memory and higher memory and like, you know, how you configure Quake to work properly. Like, it was an absolute nightmare. And then trying to get comparable results from everything from a Riva TNT to a GeForce 5 or F, whatever it was, possible. And of course, all the old kit has been sitting around forever and a half. It doesn't work. And you're like, well, where am I going to get an 8 megabyte dual-sided SIM to work in this like 486 board to work with this TNT? It was impossible. It was definitely one of the miserable things I had in my life.
Sounds awful. And let's take a break there, because while you're in the dumps, let's talk about something great. Let's talk about Pond 5, because this episode of Triangulation is brought to you by Pond 5, the world's stock media marketplace. Now, if you're making media, right, let's say you're like Will or myself, and you're like, I'm going to make a show, or you guys are making a show at home. You know, it's sometimes it's really hard to get yourself a helicopter and film a new shot over a city or something. That's where Pond 5 is like really great. They have a bunch of stock media downloads that you can get. So you can get videos, and you can get vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, whatever you're looking for. You don't have to make them yourself. You can just go to Pond 5, and it gives you instant access to a vast selection of stock media. It's got more than 10 million professional quality photos and illustrations, like I said before, 3D models. We can look up pretty much anything we want, John, couldn't we? Could we check out? Let's say we wanted to talk about monkeys. I wanted like some pictures of monkeys, because I'm doing a documentary on monkeys. Let's see if we can get some. Look, they have pictures of them. Do we have sound effects of a monkey if I wanted to hear one? I bet we could find one. If we go backwards, we have a monkey actually chewing something. This is fascinating. Look at this. That's the howler monkey.
Pond5.com.
Once you buy the actual piece there, it doesn't actually have the Pond 5 watermark at the end there. It's great for developers, designers, film, and video makers for all their audio and visual asset needs. And by the way, if you're an artist,
Pond5.com.
If you're an artist, you'll love Pond 5 too. They're shaking up the traditional stock agency business with an open, artist-friendly marketplace for professional content. So if you're an artist, you can sell on the site. Pond 5 gives you the control over pricing, and that's just unheard of. Plus, they pay out 50% royalties for each and every sale. So higher payout than any other stock photo marketplace out there right now. And since you're watching this episode of Triangulation, this month you can get 50 free stock media downloads at pond5/triangulation. Excuse me. You can get 50 free stock media downloads at pond5.com/triangulation. And that's a lot of cool things for you to try out. You can get your own monkey sounds for free. Or if you wanted to look at a city, or you wanted anything. So this is just a fantastic resource. Check it out again at pond5.com/triangulation. Easy for me to say. Will, you're back. His audio is cut.
Double down on the ad read goodness. Last month, I bought five stock clips from Pond 5.
Well, you know, if you had Pond 5 when you were starting out, I mean, you didn't have to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to build a studio. You could have just faked everything. They were like, there you go.
I could just fake the whole thing.
There you go.
You know what? That'd be quite a good experiment. Can you start just an entirely fake production company using just Pond 5?
Well,
I think that'd be quite fun.
You could have your website, and you have a nice, beautiful image of a corporate building from Pond 5. You put it up as your corporate headquarters, because it's royalty free. Right? And then you can
You know, you can go one step further. You can just make your website a stock image of a website.
that's a way to go. That is, it's an interesting way to go.
Yo, dog, I heard you like websites, so I put a stock site in your website.
So we've got more questions from the chat room. This one is kind of, this is an interesting one. As a fellow TNT fan, who's your favorite guest? Don't say Terpster.
Oh, man, I love the Terpster. The problem is having the two of us on a show together is like the worst idea in the world. Who is my favorite guest on TNT? I quite like Patrick Beja, because he's always got an interesting point of view, and there's something about that French accent that's just kind of nice. I also like who else is interesting on there? Dr. Kiki's always really good. You know, fellow law amazingness. And Richard in the chat room says I like Nilay. He's also good.
Neil is really good.
Do you know what I prefer? Do you know what though? I'm quite old school. I do quite like it when I like Darren. Darren's good on a Friday. Always Darren on a Friday. But I actually prefer the shows where it's just you guys the most.
What a suck up! Absolute suck up.
That means just like the original crew, like the little OG crew. Do you know what I hate though? What I hate apart from Terpster, I hate other British people. Because I think I'm not listening to an American tech network to hear other British people kill the other British people Just forget them. The only people that should ever be on TNT from me and Terpster.
Well, I would assume that's the kind of YouTube comments you might have seen, too. What's some of the worst ones for yourself? I know, I mean, Justin has talked about his horrible stuff. You talked about the, like, die, piggy, die, or whatever it was. What's the worst thing you got hit with in the comments or anywhere?
You know, I don't think I did too bad. Because I think most of the people that watched the stuff that I made were Twit fans, and so they were like of a slightly different caliber of person. I did get like, there was ones where people would say like, oh my God, the editing on this is awful because I'd edit it and I was completely incompetent. But I don't like.
I'm going to just pretend I know what he's saying right now, even though the audio.
Presenting a tech podcast.
There we go. The audio just caught up. I have no idea what he said. That was the best answer you've given the whole time, I got to say.
That was the best answer I've ever given. No, I was saying that the thing I used to get the most was that I was like, why is Gordon Freeman presenting a tech podcast?
I don't know who that is.
Gordon Freeman from Half-Life. I have like the beard and the big black scientist glasses.
Isn't that your Twitter avatar right now?
Yeah.
I thought that was a customized thing. I didn't realize that. I'm like, what is this? Like, no,
it's the most famous video game character of all time. It's fine that you don't know that.
Yeah,
it's not like you're some kind of technology network.
I don't have time to play games, Will. I mean, I wasn't given a ton of money by, you know, Uncle Rupert to just sit around and play games. I have to read and explain tech news. So,
that's unfortunate for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Uncle Rupert, that's brilliant.
Oh, geez. I want to ask you a question about this is actually about me. So I want to see if you validate this one. One of the worst comments I got being on Channel Flip was I saw it on iTunes. It was okay. Channel Flip is great. The best thing about it is its appeal is that it's British. I, as in Rob is my co-host, are not British. They should not be on the network. They hated us because we weren't British.
Well, you know what? I can understand that because what have I just said about TNT? I don't want to hear any British people. Screw the British people.
Exactly.
I suppose the difference is that you're a lot more talented. I think they were wrong. I think that there was absolutely a place for two New York jokers on Channel Flip. It provided a great antidote to the otherwise stuffy and boring Englishness. So I think whoever said that should be taken out of shot.
It absolutely cracked me up because I mean, like, you guys. If you didn't lose the Revolutionary War, I'd be British. Like, I mean, it's not my fault.
It could still happen. Listen, yes! I'm not ruling it out. We could still come back.
Good point. That right? should have happened.
America is on the wane, my friend.
We should have
just reelected a communist.
I should have.
So this is going to happen.
I should have invited an invasion. What was I thinking? That should have been my response. Now we know how that works out. But then everybody would be British, Will. Then you wouldn't want to listen to anybody on TNT anymore.
No, then I'd have a problem.
Yeah, so we have to work on that.
You know what? On second thoughts, keep Obama. That's going to work out fine.
Okay, we won't have a coup of any kind. So folks in the chat room.
You know, I did that, right? I know that it's not really good to talk about politics on shows like this, but I actually spent a week last month working in Florida on the Obama campaign, and it was really good fun.
Oh, I thought you actually did a coup, because we were just talking about that.
Like, oh, I did a coup!
I did do
yes,
that!
Yes, that's what happened. I went to Florida, and I took over the Obama campaign, and I was like, you guys have got no idea what you're doing, and basically, we then won Florida. So,
right. I mean, that worked out really well, because I think Florida's votes didn't even matter at the end of the election. So, good job. It didn't, actually.
Good job. You had no consequential effect whatsoever.
It was decided before Florida for once, and I'm not going to get into politics either because that's just a dirty, dirty area. Let's move away from that entirely. So what's with the jumper?
That's a very good question. It's quite cold in my house right now. It is actually quite cold in my house right now because it's 12:05 at night. Richard Yar in the chat room says, what happened to the second L in Will? Which is a good question. And one that not enough people ask me, so I'm going to take the opportunity to run with it. That I spell Will, as in William, with one L, because when I was a kid and I used to play Street Fighter in the arcade machines in town by my house, you only ever get three letters to put into the high score table. And because I have two middle names, I have four initials. So I either had to drop an initial and decide which of my names I hated the most, or take Will and just take an L off the end and just make it say Will, W-I-L. And I had so many high scores on Street Fighter, and I entered my name into that thing so many times that Will with one L basically just stuck, and it's been the thing that I've had forever after that. And it's quite handy because if you Google Will Harris, there is a like a famous baseball player and a famous bodybuilder. But if you Google Will Harris with one L, there's basically only me.
Now, this is Street Fighter 2 or the original Street Fighter?
Street Fighter 2, not the original Street Fighter.
The original one was
Street
Fighter awful. Okay, and then the original one was awful,
but Street Fighter 2 Special Championship Edition is actually the best version, which was on the Mega Drive.
Who's your pick, Ken or Ryu? Who do you pick each time?
Ryu every time.
Really? Why?
Who are you, Ken?
Well, they both say that, right? Pretty much all of them say
that. Ken?
Exactly. But the thing is, Ken is way more powerful.
No, Ken's not more powerful. Ken looks like a... Like he's got the blonde hair, and it's like, oh, get stuff. Go back to, I don't know, somewhere where blonde people come from.
You know, in the original Street Fighter, Ryu had red hair. Is that why? Did you identify?
I identify because I'm a massive ginger? Is that what you're saying?
I was trying to be nice about it, but yes, you happen to be. For the audio listeners, if you didn't know, this whole time we've been talking to a ginger, Will Harris.
You know what? My beard is ginger, but my hair is kind of more chestnut. It's kind of more normal. God, that's not a good shot at the top of my head. Receding hairline. So yes, I am a bit ginger. But as you know, have you seen, there's a great video on YouTube by an artist called Tim Minchin, who has a very funny song that's called Only a Ginger Can Call Another Ginger Ginger. And I think that's probably true. So I feel like maybe you're being a little bit racist.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I will apologize right now to all the people of a certain hair color. I apologize to you folks.
Although Liz in the chat room has just called me Jolly Red Giant, and I'm not really sure how I feel.
Oh, yeah. For those of you who've never met Will Harris, he's a big guy. He's like 6... What are you, 6'2"?
6'1". 6'1". Not as big as I used to be. I lost some pounds, man.
And when I met Will Harris the first time, it was like CES a couple of years ago. I see this very large man running at me, and with arms wide open, and I'm like, what on earth is happening? It's Will Harris. Where apparently, do you always greet people with hugs?
Only the people that I love the most.
So that was very scary, I gotta say, because he was just running at me. And I was like, oh, it's Will Harris, because I did not identify him right away. Because
we'd never met. We worked together for years, and we'd known each other for years, and we'd done that whole internet thing of never meeting, and then I met you, and I was so excited to meet you. I just couldn't contain the hugginess.
It's very odd to meet people in real life after you've known them online or had this long communication. It's just like, oh yeah, of course you're over here. You're not a short guy. You look smaller, I guess, on television is what I'm saying.
Well, I guess that's because I'm physically in a slightly smaller space. So I stand up. If I stand up, you can all see how tall I am. Like, I'm really tall.
That's
quite a little belly clap.
I hope that's the thumbnail for today's episode, because that is fantastic.
Just giving the audience what they want, Ayaz. You should know that's the first rule of show business.
That, you're right. You give them what they want. But isn't the actual second rule they don't know what they want?
Yeah, they're all idiots. Screw them.
This is a content producer right here. This is my buddy Will Harris saying. Well, you were asking yourself questions.
Pete Master in the chat room says, "Let's all hug Will Harris." Yeah,
we can try. Thanks, Pete Master. We get the chat room hug over here. We'll just put the monitors together, and it'll totally be like a hug. No engineers are doing that. This is more fun.
Yeah, no, they're not. Should be.
Well, you were asking yourself questions before. You've been doing a great job. He's run away. He's dropped the call. He's had enough of my silliness, it looks like. We're going to try to get Will Harris back, if he's going to have us.
Yes. So guess what happened?
I don't know.
I hit my bandwidth limit, like that data limit on my bandwidth. I just got like a hard stop. Like, I was just sitting, chatting to you, really enjoying myself, and all my internet browsers just went dum 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 dum. Twitter Live went dum 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 dum, and Skype just went dum dum dum. And it went, "You have used all your bandwidth for the month."
What? Who's your ISP over there?
Oh, I have the worst setup in the world. So I'm calling you from my iPhone on 3G. So I'm just burning my phone's 3G right now.
More data.
More data. So I have the worst setup at home for internet, possibly in the world, which is that I moved house about 9 months ago into the middle of the countryside because I thought I'd have this really wonderful, refined country lifestyle. And when I phoned the DSL provider, they assured me that I could get a lovely kind of like 10 meg service, which is not amazing. You know, it's not like cable, but 10 meg is plenty for, you know, most uses. And when I moved in and they actually activated my amazing 10 meg line, it turns out that the most I could get actually in practice was 200K.
200K?
200K over DSL. Because I live so far out in the middle of nowhere, like the attenuation on the copper or whatever makes it completely useless. So I basically can't get wired internet at all. And to lay fiber to my house from the nearest exchange will cost about £250,000. I don't really want to spend £250,000 on an internet connection for my house.
You could probably buy another house and just move to that one.
Just move to that
one. Yeah, exactly. But the trouble is I really like my house now. I'm sort of invested in it. So my internet setup at home is that I have a 3G HSDPA Plus wireless modem. And it's plugged into the back of a Netgear router. And the Netgear router is plugged. Oh, yeah, the other problem with my house is that it's all stone walls, so Wi-Fi can't go, like, you can't get Wi-Fi anywhere apart from the room that the actual router is in. So I have the 3G HSDPA modem going into a router, which then goes into a home power line plug below it. And then every room in my house has to have a different home power line wireless network outlet. So I have like five wireless networks in my house, depending on what room I'm in. And then that all goes back to the main router in my study, which then goes out to the 3G modem, which then goes out to like, I get like 5 meg or something. But the problem is I only then get 15 gigabytes a month of data for my house. So I had to get three different contracts so that I could get 45 gigabytes a month of data for my house. And then what happens is that about a third of the way through the month, I have to switch the SIM cards over so that I renew my data allowance. It's literally the stupidest thing in the world.
You're in internet video. How could you possibly be in this kind of setup? This is the most ridiculous setup for a person in internet video. It's not like you're even just in an audio. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I don't really have an answer to that. It seemed like a really good idea at the time. And it's certainly, you know, it's better than the 200K DSL that I could get. But it's, yeah, it's not really a great option for somebody who makes their living doing high bandwidth stuff on the internet. Thankfully, you know, the good thing is that I don't ever have to really appear on any shows on the internet. I don't really need high bandwidth for anything like Skype or video conferencing or that kind of media appearance type stuff, because there's nobody of any consequence that asks me to do that anymore.
Right, exactly. Well, I guess on these notes, maybe we should wrap this up since you are on such a limited plan, because now you're on your iPhone's 3G. I don't know what cap you got on that. We don't want to run
I'm
it
on
all
my
out.
3G, you know, bizarrely, I think I have, I think my cap on my iPhone's 3G is maybe 500 megabytes. So let's see how quickly we waste through that.
Is there anything you'd like to promote? Where can people find you online, Will Harris? Very, very quickly.
I would like to promote somebody laying some real internet to my house. But apart from that, I am going to go with at Will Harris on Twitter. Remember, that's Will with one L because of the whole Street Fighter thing. All one word, at Will Harris on Twitter. Follow me up. I'm pretty interesting.
Yeah, as you found out, this hour is very interesting. His internet setup, I'm sure you're going to get a ton of at replies on how you could actually make that setup a lot better, by the way.
Oh, God, that would be amazing.
There will be a way to do that.
Do that.
And I can hear myself back in Will's phone. Will, thanks again for being on today. Eye-opening or ear-opening or something.
Eye-opening. It was wonderful, Ayaz. Thank you so much for having me. You know, I said at the beginning you were doing a great job. I think you've done a great job in extraordinarily difficult circumstances. I not only have terrible internet, but I'm also British, and that's not an easy situation for anybody to be in. And what's going to happen now is I'm going to hang up the iPhone, I'm going to get into my pajamas. I'm going to go to bed and I'm going to listen to Tech News Today. And I'm just going to pretend that we're talking to each other all over again. It's going to be lovely.
That sounds fantastic. So long, Will Harris. He's obviously a scholar, a gentleman, and an absolute liar. Thank you so much for being on today.
Good luck. Ayaz, love you. Bye.
Bye, Will. Well, you just watched one of the stranger episodes of Triangulation. This show airs live on live.twit.tv at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock Eastern. Next week, Leo Laporte will be back in maybe this chair or that chair. I'm not really sure which chair he sits in. But I had a great time hosting Triangulation with Will Harris. That was a great time. Thanks for watching, everybody, and we'll see everybody next time.